It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Tony Vernetti and I'm filling in for the lawyers from Shaw, Bransford, and Roth who normally host the show. I'm, of course, happy to be here and really excited about our show because we have three dynamic in-studio guests to help me with our discussion today. First, we have Tim McManus from the Partnership for Public Service, and Tim is the Vice President for Education and Outreach at the Partnership. Good morning, Tim, and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tony. Good to be here.
And we are also pleased to have two representatives from the Merit Systems Protection Board, or as they're known by their acronym, the MSPB. We have with us Melissa Mehring and Jim Eisenman. Melissa is the Associate Director in the Office of Appeals, and Jim is the General Counsel at the MSPB. Melissa and Jim, good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Morning, Tony.
Our discussion today is going to center around some recent MSPB decisions and some new Obama administration initiatives involving special hiring programs in the federal government. And specifically, if you're reading the what I call the federal employee press sector, you've heard some stuff about the federal career intern program. And we're going to talk about how the law on veterans preference essentially ended this controversial program called Federal Career Intern Program, or its acronym, the VSIP, which I can't seem to get down very, very well. Just a reminder that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, our sponsor, where 15 minutes or more could save you on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. Of course, this is a live call-in show, and we welcome our listeners to call in or send us an email. So if you'd like to join our discussion, you can call us at 1-877-936-9333. Or you can always email us a question at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. And I see we already have some emails in, which we'll get to a little bit later. Tim, I'd like to start with you to sort of introduce our subject matter today. But before you do that, for our listeners who don't read the Washington Post, haven't seen the partnership sector in there, tell them a little bit about what the Partnership for Public Service is all about.
Sure. The Partnership's a nonprofit organization. We've been around for just about 10 years now. And the mission is really to inspire the next generation of public servants and also transform the way that government works. Ultimately, what we see is a more effective government that serves the American people, and the means to achieve that is to ensure that there's good people in government. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, the organization. Tony, if you don't mind, I'd like to highlight a couple programs, too, that the
Absolutely.
Listeners could wrap their arms around. A couple of programs that are indicative of the work of the partnership. We have a Call to Serve network, a network of colleges and universities around the country, 732 now, that have devoted themselves and working toward promoting federal service to their students as an employer of choice. So, you know, a great network, folks that are really engaged in trying to prop up public service and get their students into public service. The second is the Excellence in Government Fellows Program, which is a program that's been around for a long time now, and is a leadership development program for GS 13s through 15s. So again, a great way to develop your leadership skills and network with other emerging leaders across government as well. The third is the Service to America Medals, which hopefully most of the listeners have heard about, but it is a recognition program that really recognizes it's really the Oscars for federal employees,
right.
Recognizes outstanding federal employees. And by the way, the nomination deadline is next week, January 30th, so get your nominations in. And then the final piece is our Best Places to Work rankings that really go off the Employee Viewpoint Survey and rank federal agencies based on that as best places to work. And again, really focused on leadership and employee engagement.
And then, you know, Fed Talk is no stranger to those programs. I know we do a show each year on the best places to work in the federal government when that's released. And, of course, we always do a show about the service in America Metals. And, you know, those are great programs. If somebody wanted to get more information about the partnership, where should they go to?
You can go to our website, www.ourpublicservice.org.
Okay. So when I started the show, I talked about this federal career intern program and how, you know, recent MSPB decision basically ended it. Well, I shouldn't say the decision ended it. That decision, as the two other lawyers in the room will get to the facts of that later, you know, and tell us those facts are specific to that case. The Obama administration essentially took that as a lead to end it. But before we get into all that, tell us what it was all about and why it was controversial.
Yeah, so the Federal Career Intern Program, or the FSIP program, was actually established by executive order back in 2000, and really its purpose was a couple-fold. One, it was important to recognize that it wasn't designed as an internship program in the traditional sense of what we look at internship, temporary employment, maybe leading to full-time employment, maybe not. This was really designed as a hiring mechanism and a developmental program. And I think that's, as we get into the show, that's probably one of the reasons for its downfall as well, is whether or not it was really being fully implemented as a developmental program. The second really rationale for the establishment of this was also an easy way or a more streamlined way to actually get exceptional candidates into government. And I think ultimately a recognition, probably even when FSIP even started, that the federal hiring process wasn't necessarily getting everybody into government that should, and that there were some skill sets and some occupational groups that you really needed to look at additional hiring mechanisms to try to bring them in through.
And can I just add one quick thing, which is the MSPB and their studies program, which I think Jim is going to talk more about, did a study on the issue of FSIP. In general, it was called Building a High-Quality Workforce, the Federal Career Intern Program, which was issued in 2005. And that study looks at the processes agency used to recruit, select, and retain FSIP appointees. So if somebody wanted a little more history of how it was used, that might be additional information.
Is there one of the things I've never been quite sure? Are there certain groups that were, you know, that were eligible, you know, for the program? When I think of special hiring, you know, in the government, I think of, you know, Schedule A. We used to hire, you know, folks with disabilities. You know, was there any specific group targeted, or was it more just give agencies the flexibility to go find what it needed, basically?
Yeah, again, it was less focused on a specific group. At least that was the initial intent. It was greater flexibility. I think, you know, certainly agencies used it differently. So there were agencies, for instance, DHS, the Customs and Border Protection, used it really almost as almost an exclusive way to get Border Patrol agents. And for them, certainly that made sense, because going out to the general public for a border protection agent, where 95 or 99% of us don't have a criminal background that for in criminal investigation or right. or law enforcement doesn't make sense. So the fact that they could actually do targeted recruitment to a subsection of the population that was actually eligible and qualified for the position actually made sense. So, you know, again, there's somebody that used it really exclusively, almost exclusively for one type of occupational group within CBP. You know, others used it randomly for this occupation and that occupation. And again, I think, you know, part of the challenge for federal agencies was it wasn't not only by occupation were there no parameters, but also by grade level or experience level, really no expectations set either. So, you know, again, you could say that somebody at the college university level who maybe can't compete as well because they don't have experience, and unfortunately, the federal assessment programs often weigh heavily on experience. You know, may have an unfair advantage to try to get in. you could also use the FCIP program for somebody who's had a 30-year experience somewhere. So,
right.
I think that's actually leads to some of the challenges or some of the difficulties with implementing it across government.
Now, I mean, those are some of the reasons that I know a lot of folks, at least, you know, managers and agencies, and I know the partnership was certainly in favor of the program, but it has a fair amount of critics as well. The unions in particular, I myself, you know, can remember long back in the day when I negotiated a collective bargaining agreement with NTEU. I mean, this turned out to be a big issue. I got to stop here and take our first break, but when I come back, Tim, I want to pick up, you know, on what the criticisms are, and whether they're credible. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm discussing the Federal Career Intern Program with Tim McManus from the Partnership. We'll continue our discussion after this break and a word from our sponsor.
Hello, my federal friends. It's the Geico Gecko, and I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top three. The big news. Geico now offers discounts for most federal employees GS7 or above, which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right. Geico, the government employees insurance company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about Geico's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Tony Bernetti. Today, I'm here with Tim McManus of the Partnership for Public Service and Melissa Maring and Jim Eisenman of the MSPB to talk to you about the end of the FISSIP program and what's next. If you have a question or comment, please give us a call, toll-free, of course, at 1-877-936-9333. Or you can email us your question at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Before we took our break, we were talking about, at least from my perspective, all these things that are good about the FISSIP program. But it had its fair share of critics. The unions, you know, in particular, I think several veterans groups as well. What was their position? What was their problem with it?
Yeah, I think probably the two biggest issues with the FCIP program, at least from my vantage point, one is that it didn't require public notice. So, you know, for FCIP programs, you didn't have to announce to the world. Again, from a hiring manager perspective. Great mechanism, and again, to the case that I used with Customs and Border Protection, or an engineer, you know, why let me know about an engineering position? I'll never qualify for it. So I think that was one of it, and particularly for folks who are currently in government, does lack of public notice then shut them out of additional opportunities for advancement moving within an agency or even to another agency? So I think, you know, certainly the lack not needing to meet a public notice requirement was one of them. The second one, I think, was actually veterans' preferences as well. And again, you know, if you look at the executive order and even OPM's initial guidance around the FCIP program, it was clear that veterans, at least from our estimation, clear that veterans' preference was supposed to be applied to FCIP. Now, unfortunately, in some cases, it wasn't being applied or wasn't being applied evenly. So, from our perspective, if you take the step back, look at the intent initially and say, okay, was this a good program? We actually thought it was a good program. We thought it should have continued. But, you know, when there's a bad apple, when there's a manager or an entire agency who's misusing it, you know, that does create problems for the rest of us.
Yeah, just, you know, if it's not being implemented appropriately in one agency or the other, you know, it begs the question, you know, do you throw the baby out with the bathwater? And some of what we're talking about, you know, goes back, I love going back to Teddy Roosevelt days. You know, we're supposed to, you know, have fair and open competition for federal government jobs. You know, they're based upon merit and fair competition. And that's what, Melissa and I will talk a little bit later about the competitive service, and that's what that is all about. And when you start to create exceptions, you know, you need to have good rules for those exceptions. But when those rules are ignored, that's when you have problems. And that's when you have decisions like the decision we're going to talk about in a little bit from the MSPB. That's a great segue to the MSPB. Jim, my good old friend, is in here in studio with me, and I'm going to turn it over to him and let him introduce the Merit Systems Protection Board to our audience.
Great. Thanks, Tony. It's great to be here. The Merit Systems Protection Board is an independent quasi-judicial agency that was established to protect the federal merit systems, and we really do that in about three ways. We adjudicate appeals under both appellate and original jurisdiction. We issue government-wide studies regarding the civil service system, and we also review OPM regulations and significant actions by OPM. Let me tell you a little bit about the structure of the MSPB and how these cases come through the board. First, the board's comprised of three presidentially appointed board members, the chairman, vice chairman, and member. Currently, the vice chairman is Susan Sway Grundman, and the chairman is Susan Sway Grundman, and the vice chairman is Ann Wagner. They were both.
You'll hear about that demotion when you get back.
Yeah, I know. I can't wait to get back to the office. Maybe I'll be taking the rest of the afternoon off. They were both confirmed in November of 2009. The member is Mary Rose, and she's been with the board since 2005. The board offices and the offices that really adjudicate the appeals is the Office of Regional Operations. And that's where the administrative judges are. And they hear the appeals and render decisions on these cases from in terms of whether the appeal is an adverse action or it's an individual right of appeal regarding whistleblowing or a veteran's appeal, as we'll talk about later.
So yeah. If I'm an employee, I'm fired from my job, I exhaust the agency administrative process, this is where I would appeal my removal and try to get a remedy to this administrative judge level, correct?
Absolutely. And the judges are in regional and field offices throughout the country. The process from there, whichever side loses or is unhappy with the judge's decision can file a petition for review with the board members. And that case is actually sent to Melissa's office, the Office of Appeals Counsel, which drafts the opinions for the board members, and then the board members render the decisions. In terms of our studies function, our Office of Policy and Evaluation prepares those and issues those. As Melissa mentioned, that we had a study back in 2005 regarding that addressed the FSIP issue. But they issue a whole host of studies regarding the civil service system and do a fantastic job. I just want to mention a few things, Tony, about what's been happening since Chairman Grundman has been there in November 2009. Beginning in 2010, the board has done a great deal in terms of outreach with its stakeholders, whether it's appellants representatives or agency representatives or good government groups, including the partnership and also managers organizations. In addition, in terms of outreach, the board has held oral argument for the first time in about 20 years. They did it twice in the fall of last year in what the board considered to be significant cases that would impact or could impact individuals beyond the parties themselves. Board solicited amicus briefs in those cases.
And when I read that, I couldn't believe it's been 20 years since it's been. There's been significant cases, along the years where oral argument would have been beneficial.
Yeah, and it was over 20 years, and certainly I know when I was in private practice, I certainly had requested that, but always been denied. In addition, as I mentioned, our Office of Policy and Evaluation. In terms of doing studies, there was a Sunshine Act meeting, an open meeting that the board held in December of last year where OP presented the approximately 30 studies it was considering, had public comment from the public, including the partnership as well. And we expect that the board will be issuing its the research agenda for 2011 to 2013 relatively soon. And one last thing I want to plug is that the board, starting this month, has been has issued what's called the Merit System Principle of the Month, which addresses one merit system principle, and there are nine of them. And you can go to our website, mspb.gov, and look at them. And we think it's an important thing for the board to educate the public and federal employees and managers about what the merit systems are.
And I would repeat the website one more time, www.mspb.gov. I'm always telling folks, you know, when you're looking for more information on their rights, their appeal rights, just general information about federal employee rights, that's a great user-friendly website to check out, and also, you know, read up on the latest decisions. So let's segue, Melissa, into the real meat of what we want to talk about today, which is the Dean and Evans case and the veterans' preference. But before we, I think we got to create the stage a little bit and talk a little bit about this concept that I mentioned earlier about competitive service and another concept called accepted service.
Absolutely. I did just want to add one thing to Jim's preview for the MSPB, and that is also the studies function. There is a tab for that on the MSPB website, and so you can get the newsletter by email, and you can read all of our studies there. So if you're interested in this type of information, which I think is really well done and very interesting both to managers and employees, it's a great resource.
Yeah, and you can subscribe to the listserv to be updated on the upcoming studies.
So now, you'd think I worked in OPE, but I don't. I work in the Office of Appeals Counsel, and I'm going to talk, I guess, just briefly about when we're talking about the FSIP program, which is in the accepted service, and what's important to understand is normal hiring process for government jobs is through the competitive service, and that's why we call it the accepted service, because it is actually the exception. The president can make that type of exception under 5 U.S.C. 3302, and I'll try not to get too technical. Let me know if I get bogged down in the weeds. But for as it is necessitated by conditions of good administration, so it's warranted based on good administration to accept a position from the competitive service, which is what the FSIP program did. There are actually three schedules under which you can be appointed under the federal service, and that's, believe it or not, A, B, and C. Schedule A is attorneys, like myself, and chaplains, and I don't know where those two meet, but also, as you had mentioned, Tony, for individuals with certain types of disabilities, severe physical disabilities, mental retardation, psychiatric disabilities, and again, I don't know where they come in with the chaplains and the attorneys, but they're all under Schedule A.
You're in dangerous ground taking on the chaplains there, I got to tell you. Listen.
Well, they're sitting with the attorneys. It's all good. So anyway, and then under Schedule B, which was where the FSIP program fell, you also have the Student Career Experience Program, which we're going to talk a little bit about when we get more into where we currently are with things. But that is an exception where it was impractical to hold open competition or to apply usual competitive examining procedures. That's the Schedule B exception. And then Schedule C is what we commonly refer to as political appointees, those who hold confidential or policy determining positions.
So let's set this. So then we talk about the competitive. So we talk about the exceptions, but the competitive service. I want to point out that you were talking about a competitive examination. There's often a points process, and how does the veteran's preference? How does that work within the competitive service process normally?
So within the competitive service process, normally what happens is when there is an examination, veterans receive additional points. If you are a normal veteran, you receive, I believe it's 5 points, and if you are a compensably injured disabled veteran, then you receive 10 points, additional points. In addition to that, if you are on the same ranking or rating as a non-preference eligible, you will be listed first on the certificate. It also then requires that an agency go through Passover procedures, which means that if the agency wishes to pass over a veteran, then they must provide an explanation for that to OPM and get approval from OPM in order to do that. So while it's not impossible, that there is a procedure that must be followed in order to do so. Those procedures don't necessarily exist under an accepted service situation. Obviously, when you're in the accepted service, if there's no examination, there wouldn't be any points to add to in order to increase the ranking.
Okay, that's we have to stop here and take our second break, but that's a great introduction to our subject. When we're going to have to stop here and hear a word from our sponsor. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hey, it's the Geico Gecko. Now, as a federal employee, you're probably one for a smart presentation, so I've put together some charts and graphs here. There you go. That will help illustrate the money you could save by switching to Geico. First thing you'll notice is that GEICO now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. Now this is big news. But that shouldn't come as any surprise from a car insurance company that has been serving government employees since 1936. And as you can see on this graph here, it's probably why we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. Yeah, no, I do actually realise you can't see these, but trust me, they're rather impressive. Especially the 97% customer satisfaction rate. And when you consider it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more, well, all you GS7 employees or above should just contact GEICO. Tell him, Mike.
Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey, and the Gecko said it best. Most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above, could get a discount on their car insurance. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
I'm Bill Bransford, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Fed Talk brings you inside information on hot topics in the federal community. From the halls of Congress to federal agencies, get the latest on the laws, regulations, and activities that directly impact federal employees. Tune into Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, as we bring in the experts to bring you inside the issues.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Tony Vernetti, and I'm joined by Tim McManus of the Partnership for Public Service, Melissa Merring, and Jim Eisenman of the MSPB. If you'd like to be part of our discussion today, give us a call at 1-877-936-9333, or you can email us a question at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Melissa, before we took our break, you were sort of setting the stage for us, explaining competitive service, accepted service, what veterans' preference means. Now let's take that all together and tell us about the Dean and Evans case that the MSPB recently decided.
Sure. In Dean and Evans, we have two people who were entitled to a veteran's preference, meaning that they had served in the military and therefore, based on certain specific criteria, they had a preference in hiring under the competitive service and at times under the accepted service. As Tim McManus mentioned, that it was intended that veterans' preference still have some role, but it just wasn't specifically defined what that role was. So under one of the requirements for competitive service positions is that they be publicly announced. Agencies have to notify OPM of vacant competitive service positions, and OPM is responsible for making public notification, and that's a statutory requirement. When it is accepted service, such as an FSIP position, there was no similar requirement. And therefore, when agencies were filling positions under the Federal Career Intern Program, they were not always making them publicly announced. And therefore, individuals like Mr. Dean were not always made aware of a vacancy for which they may qualify but weren't aware of it, and so they couldn't apply. So Mr. Dean filed an appeal which involved a systemic argument that the FSIP violated laws related to veterans' preference because in the accepted service, there's no statutory obligation to make the notification public when you've got a vacancy. In Evans, we had a slightly different situation because Mr. Evans was aware of the position and Mr. Evans applied. There were actually 9 vacant positions, and the agency issued 3 separate vacancy announcements, and including one under the Federal Career Intern Program, as well as a competitive announcement. Mr. Evans applied under the Veterans Reemployment Act announcement and was... I'm sorry, the Veterans Recruitment Announcement, and was on the list for selection. The agency decided not to use the 2 certs that involved the Veteran Recruitment and the Open Source Vacancy Announcement, but instead used the Federal Career Intern Program Announcement and selected from that, and Mr. Evans was not selected. So what Mr. Evans argued before the board was that OPM failed to justify its placement of the FSIP positions into the accepted service. And if we go back to what I initially said, which was under the statute, the president has to show that it is the conditions of good administration that warrant the exception. So under OPM's regulations, there was no requirement that agencies do that. So that was one argument. And the other argument was that agencies were designating positions to be filled under FSIP without getting prior approval from OPM. Mm-hmm. And what Mr. Evans argued was that they don't have the authority to further delegate the authority that the president had delegated to OPM. Mm-hmm. So this question we don't even have to think about anymore because that question was specifically left open by the board. While they assumed it for the purposes of consideration of this case that OPM could delegate, they reserved the issue for when it might actually be significant to the case that we were dealing with. In this case, it was not necessary to reach that issue in order to conclude that the FSIP program as applied here was not was violating the veterans' preference.
I'd be remiss if I have a quick question on the facts here, but I want to point out you know, we talk about the way the veteran's preference applies to the Federal Career Intern Program here, you know, how the facts apply. Be remiss if I didn't point out, you know, the agencies aren't, you know, intentionally, you know, trying to discriminate against the veteran or not use the veteran preference. They're trying to use these other authorities, as Tim pointed out in the Border Patrol situation. They felt they had a good need to go that way and use that authority instead of the basic competitive service. Melissa, do you know? I mean, what was the VA's reasoning and rationale here? Why they wanted to go off of the FSIP rather than go through the other competitive process?
You know, actually, I don't believe that was specifically argued in this case. They had the alternative under FSIP to use it,
right,
and therefore they chose to do so.
Right.
And so their motivation wasn't necessarily at issue, similar to the issue in Dean. It wasn't the motivation that was significant. It was rather that the program as applied was not allowing for the veterans' preference, which these people were entitled to.
Right. And all I'm trying to say, it's my opinion, you know, that the agencies in doing these things are not doing it because they're anti-veteran, particularly the Veterans Administration, which is the agency in the Dean case. You know, this is sometimes just the application, you know, of how all these laws come together. We tried to try to be flexible in our hiring for all the really good reasons that Tim has pointed out and the partnership has put out. And then, you know, sometimes they run afoul of some other really good programs like the Veterans Preference of programs. So what was the ultimate decision then?
So the ultimate decision was that FSIP as it was applied in these cases was not a permissible use of hiring authority. In Dean, the specific reason was because it was not allowing for or not requiring agencies to publicly announce the positions. And in Evans, the issue was agency was not – one, OPM's regulations weren't requiring agencies and was not required as part of the program to justify why positions were being put into the accepted service. And again, we go back to the reasons why agencies or the government may accept positions from competitive service. And then the other issue was in Evans, they found that while there's not the general rule to justify, in Evans, they did issue vacancy announcements, which allowed for competition. And so to say that they couldn't get a sufficient applicant pool or attract a sufficient number of qualified applicants really wasn't accurate, at least in this case. And therefore, as applied in that situation, it could not stand. Again, they left out the issue whether any agency could potentially have created a sufficient justification. But because it wasn't required within the regulations were not valid. And as applied in this case specifically, they were not valid.
And I want to be clear that, you know, it's in the era of all the immediate press that we get. You know, I wake up in the morning and I hear Mike Causey or somebody railing, the MSPB has ended EFSA. They have, you know, ended the Federal Career Intern Program. And that's, you know, the MSPB didn't make a decision on the program. You know, it was on the facts of this case that it was just, you know, for them to deviate. I think as Melissa was trying to put out, it just was not justified. You know, I think that's a point that often goes missed, I think, in the community out there.
Absolutely. And I think you're making a really good point, which is, as we address the issues which come before us, we don't go out and proactively tell agencies or Congress or the president, you know, what he can and cannot do and what agencies can and cannot do. We adjudicate the cases that become before us. And in this case, the facts of these cases rendered the application of the program to violate veterans' preference.
And it was, in fact, and I think we'll get into this in our final 15 minutes, it was the Obama's administration sort of response to this. Or maybe they always had it ready to go. Who knows? You know, which essentially was their decision to end it and put in what they call this new pathway programs, which we'll talk about. But I want to also, briefly talk about two similar cases at the MSPB. The first one, Jim, if I can have you comment on the Denton case and really the Federal Register notice, or Melissa. Melissa's better than none for this. He's pointing to Melissa. Those
I'll
of you who can't
it,
see me, I can't see Melissa. She's hiding behind two computer
She's
monitors.
Doing it for your benefit.
Anyway, in Denton, and as I mentioned previously, the SCEP program, which is the Student Career Experience Program,
right.
Which was also created as a Schedule B accepted service type of appointment, came up in a case called Denton versus, I believe it's Department of Agriculture. So in that case, the agency used the SCEP program to fill a position, as well as also doing a case examination announcement and a merit promotion announcement. Under merit promotions, again, veterans preference eligibles are able to compete even though they are not current federal employees, where other non-federal employees may not have that same right. And so in this case, there was a merit promotion announcement, so a veterans preference eligible would be entitled to apply if the agency was looking outside their own workforce for applicants, or allowed applicants from outside their own workforce. And so this program, as applied, raised issues which were also present in Dean and Evans and in the Federal Register announcement. We specifically explained what the holding was in Dean and Evans, as I've just described them. And also then described what issues we are soliciting amicus briefs on for the case in Denton. And agencies have until February 7th to submit any kind of amicus brief. The entire Federal Register notice is available online. But again, the specific issues are very similar in that, does SCEP violate the veterans' preference by allowing agencies to use the accepted service to fill a position where it is not practical to hold competition, but they have in fact held competition?
So I'm going to put you two on the spot here for a second. Look at Jim, looking at me. So the future of SCAP and STEP and all that, that's, it's sort of uncertain in the guidance that was issued from OPM. It's been extended, for agencies that can use it till the end of February. So if that goes away in February, does that render this moot or no? Because you got a particular, facts of a case here.
Well, we have a particular case, so it wouldn't be moot with respect to the individual. And I believe under the new Pathways program, and I know you're going to get into the executive order information, and of course, let me say from the start, originally the board had held that because EFSIP was created as part of an executive order. It was an authorized exception to the competitive service. That was specifically overruled in Dean and Evans in holding that it didn't, again, go back to the ensuring that it was conditions of good administration that warranted this approach. So even if it's an executive order, it doesn't make it necessarily valid. However, all of those disclaimers there, the Pathways program, which is at Executive Order 13562, states that the SCEP program can continue to be used until final regulations are issued by OPM.
Yeah, that's correct.
So unlike EFSIP, which is slated under 13562 to expire at the end of February, so by effective March 1st, EFSIP is officially dead. That is not the case with SCEP, as well as, I believe, the recent graduates program.
So that's a great summary of the current state of the legal landscape as it stands now. We're going to stop here. Take our final break, hear a word from our sponsor. When we return, we'll wrap up our discussion and specifically talk about the Obama's administration, what I call a response to these decisions, and the new sort of hiring programs that they're trying to put in place via executive order.
It's the Geico Gecko with a little hello to all you federal employees. Now, in government, there are people on all points of the political spectrum, but there is one thing that everyone agrees on. Saving money is good. Which brings me to the big news. GEICO now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or an aristocrat, left wing, right wing or a chicken wing. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, you could be saving a lot of money on your car insurance by switching to GEICO. So no matter if you're blue or red or in my case green. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, contact GEICO and see how much you could save. Isn't that right, Mike?
Exactly right, my little green friend. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. And like the Gecko said, discounts are available for most federal employees, GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're entering our last segment of the show. If you have a question or comment for our guest, call us on our toll-free number, 1-877-936-9333, or you can email us a question at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. I did want to get to one of our emails, Melissa, that we had earlier in the show. This person is a current FSIP person in their first year of their program. We actually got three identical emails, are very similar, asking this question. They're in the first year of their program, and they were promoted from a GS9 to an 11. And most people know in a government there's a career ladder positions. This one looks like it's supposed to go from 11 to a 12. So the executive order says that the FSIP folks are supposed to be converted to the competitive service. The question that this individual has is what's going to happen to her career ladder promotion. Now I know we don't have a specific answer for that, but where can we direct them maybe to get a – it seems like they're not getting the answers from their agency.
And I think part of it is when you dismantle a program that's been used so aggressively as FSIP has. I think a full 50% of entry-level positions between 5 and 9 now were hired under FSIP as of, I believe, 2008. So, you know, you're going to have questions like this. As you mentioned, and I think Jim mentions, we don't issue advisory opinions, so I can't definitively tell somebody what is going to happen. What I can say is OPM has issued guidance, and it is in a memorandum for chief human capital officers. It was issued on January 5th, 2001, and it is on OPM's website, so they can get it off of that. The www site is very long. But I think it's if they went to www.chcoc.gov, they should be able to get to it. Again, I can't say whether it is accurate or correct, but I can say that is the guidance that has been issued. And
I'll just say, you know, to these individuals, time will tell. You're going to be essentially being taken out of your program. You don't have a legal right to that career ladder promotion, unfortunately. You're going to be set into a new position, and that will hopefully define what's going to happen. Tim, you got a point on this?
Yeah, the one other thing that I'd add to those folks who have this concern is you better be talking to your supervisor right now, because the executive order and more importantly than OPM's implementing guidance says that if they haven't been converted by March 1, that they will automatically be converted. But that doesn't mean that if you're in an FSIP program right now and an agency could, in fact, end your FSIP program tomorrow. So you have to have that conversation. You ought to be having that conversation right now with your supervisor about the intent for them to convert you.
Right, right. And what my message is going to be, you know, I often, you know, in my old law practice days, I tell clients, you need to be active and be part of the solution here. You know, once you're converted, talk to your supervisor, find out this is going to apply to you. I can tell you my experience, you know, the government's not generally going to use this to stick it to you. They're going to try to, you know, do right by the situations under which they hired you. But, you know, you need to be understanding that there are, you know, are circumstances beyond their control. So the key here is communicating, you know, with your supervisor. I don't think you're going to get a, you know, yes or no decision, you know, out of them. So I'm just sort of roll with it right now. So Tim, let's shift a little bit and let's talk about, you know, the point I wanted to make, you know, is the MSPB didn't, you know, it didn't kill the FSIP program. It rendered a decision. It said the way this agency was applying it in this case, you know, was inconsistent with the veteran preference laws and rules. And the administration took the approach to end it. Why did it have to throw the baby out with the bathwater?
Well, I think you know what I've said to a lot of federal agencies. One, the president's executive order that actually basically abolished FCIP should not have come as any surprise. His May 11th memo on hiring reform actually it directed OPM to study this and to figure out whether or not this was a right use of it and everything else. So again, you know, for federal agencies, if you kind of got caught with your pants down, shame on you, because the writing was on the wall a little bit. So now how do we move forward? Well, I think the Pathways program actually, you know, provides some of those ways forward, and specifically around an audience or a demographic group that, again, as I mentioned earlier, has a hard time getting into government under current competitive service rules, and largely because, again, you know, to get into federal government values experience. If you're a recent college grad, it's really hard to compete with somebody. Even if you've got the skill sets that are necessary, it's hard to compete. And if you're not getting people in at that entry level from colleges and universities, and they're all going to private and nonprofit sector, again, we're losing some of the greatest talent in government. We're not actually filling it. We've got to be able to figure out ways to bring them in. So again, I think the Pathways program begins to look at ways to bring people in in a very focused attempt to be competitive with private and nonprofit sectors as it relates to entry level or recent college grad talent. I think, you know, with all of the partnership or with all of the pathways programs, I think, you know, ultimately devil's still in the details. We've got an executive order, we've got some implementing guidance, and no regulations yet. So, you know, what does this look like? Who knows yet? An internship program, what does that really look like? Is that actually a full replacement of the SCEP program? Don't know. How does STEP play into this? Don't know. As you look at the recent college grad program, which, again, I think here's where OPM, you know, looked at saying, okay, let's make sure that we're not only applying veterans' preference to it, but also what other considerations do vets need to have in this recent grad program as well? So in order to be eligible for the recent grad program, somebody has to have been out of school 2 years or less. There's an exception, though, there for vets, which actually extends that to 6 years if it's because of military service. So I think, you know, they've done right by taking into concerns that were raised from the earlier cases, and that's in here. But again, devil's still in the detail. Does the recent grad program only apply to undergraduate programs? Does it apply to graduate-level folks as well? Don't know. Won't know for a while yet. Clearly, we think it should apply to both because, frankly, a lot of government's most mission-critical talent requires specialized skills that you're going to get through graduate school. And then the PMF program, you know, again, devil in the details, an expansion of the PMF program. What does that really mean? How is that administered? I think, you know, clearly the most detail that's around in the implementing guidance of the executive order is around the FCIP program. And again, FCIP goes away on February 28th. If you're not intentionally converted at that point, if you're in an FCIP program and you're not intentionally converted, you will be converted automatically. I think for those in FCIP programs right now, the other key to this for you is whatever time of service you've spent in your FCIP program, that actually counts toward your probationary period as well. So if you've actually already completed a full year of an FCIP program or more than a year, when you come in, you're done with your probationary period. If you're in 4 months into a FCIP program as you're converted, you still then have 8 months left. So again, they're taking the time served in FCIP to put against your probationary period.
This is a technical question, so I apologize for asking it. I'm not sure if we know the are the FCIP appointments, are they given under what's called an NTE, and not to exceed? Do they have to end with a conversion? Does anybody know?
Yes, 2 year appointment has to end with conversion or again your
or termination,
which makes right. the probationary period part very, very important. So just breaking it down a little bit, what's called the pathways, the three pathways. We have the internship program, which generally applies to high school graduates and college graduates too.
Actually, the internship program is for those who are currently in school, so
in
haven't
school.
Graduated yet.
Right.
Could be in high school, could be at a community college, a graduate level. So again, think of really, again, the beauty of the internship piece of this is think of internship in any other case that you'd think of it. That's what this is.
And these are paid positions.
Could be paid.
I thought I read.
But by and large, yes.
I'd love a job like that in high school. and then the second one is the recent graduates program, which you talked about, and then the presidential management fellows program. Those are the three things that make up the pathways. And as you said, the devil, you know, really is in the details. Before we went on the air, you know, this morning, the first question I asked everybody when I came in the room, I read all this stuff. All right, we have these new rules. Who's to say these aren't going to violate the veterans' preference, you know, laws? And, you know, nobody's talking about that. And you're not talking about that because there aren't any details. And I would think, you know, certainly, Mr. Barry and his staff are very smart over there at OPM. When they, you know, create the details, they'll be very respective and informed by the MSPB's recent decisions and you know, weave in the proper respect for veterans' rights, or you can, you know, always do what I think is the easiest fix, is to kick it back with Congress and start it off with notwithstanding any other provision of law. And then that just kicks out everything and you can do what you want. Tim, I want to, you know, in a final sort of minute that we have left, you know, and this really goes a lot with what the partnership is all about. You know, is why I think what's lost on folks is, you know, why are these flexibilities, you know, in the federal government, these these hiring flexibilities? Why are they really necessary, you know, for us to have the best government we can?
You know, I think ultimately what it comes down to is you've got to create different pathways, and you've got to look at bringing in different people based on different conditions. And again, those conditions, there could be a range of conditions, but it really is